Welcome everyone to the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability.
Let's go.
You're listening to episode 197. And today we have Tim Allison. He is a lifelong entrepreneur, business coach, author, and host of Screw the Naysayers podcast show. I actually have a book here that is signed, I believe. Yes, it is. Yeah. I have a first edition book, ladies and gentlemen, which is pretty dang cool to say to support a friend. But at age 31, Tim walked away from a six-figure income and moved to a tiny fishing village in Nova Scotia, Canada. The naysayers laughed when he said he was starting an educational software company. They stopped laughing when sales topped $10 million. His life philosophy is simple. Know the life you want and have the courage to live it. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into all those heavy-hitting questions, and I'm sure there are going to be a lot of them, but we have to talk about something that's extremely important to me, and that's food. So imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. Yeah. Where are you going to eat, and what are you going to order to make your day complete?
I'm going to be in a place called Vernazza, which is in Cinque Terre in the Italian Riviera. I'm going to be in the evening sitting outside in the square after the insanity of the day trippers have left. And I'm going to have the antipasto della casa, which is going to be about 14, 15 different plates of all these amazing, this amazing seafood and antipasto format and a nice cold bottle of Venetian wine.
There you go. I like it. So a Venetian wine. What Venetian wine is, I'm assuming, is definitely going to be a little bit different than your traditional wine.
Yeah, well, I mean, they make some nice crisps that, you know, they're not classic or anything, but they just go great when you're, you know, if you're sitting outside. It's the same thing in Venice too. But I mean, in Cinque Terre, you're just looking out at the water, the little fishing boats are bobbing there, and you're eating all this stuff that there's one fishing boat left in the community. It used to be a big fishing community. Now the whole thing is really built on tourism. And it's very hard to get to. You can drive, but mostly you have to come by train.
Interesting.
But there's one boat left that goes out and catches the food that you'll eat in the square. And we went there about 10 years apart. The first time we went there, I remember when this family restaurant, I wish I could remember the name. I could walk you right to it if we got there, but they're family run, Jonathan. So the owner's outside and he's playing soccer with these little kids that are like 5, 6 years old. And there's two brothers, and the one guy's working his butt off inside and the other one's outside. And, you know, every so often he comes in and we go back like 10 years later and we walk in and we see, I remember you playing soccer and your kid. And don't you think he goes behind the bar and he takes out a picture of this children's soccer team from the area that had gone on to, you know, win some memorable game, you know, for them or whatever. But it's just a reminder that family is so important, and that, sure, you know, it's about work and everything else, but part of work was making sure the little ones were running around safe in that square and having fun. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Although
too often overrun by mobs of tourists, but
it's still beautiful. I've had the luxury of being in Venice as well. Not to the exact, I'm sure, area that you are, but it is a breathtaking place. And I think I love what you said about living life. And I think you have such an amazing outlook on life that I'm aware of, but a lot of people that are listening may not be, because they don't know who you are just yet. So my first question is, tell me about a time that you felt lost or blind in business, and how did you overcome those obstacles?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few that come to mind, but the one I immediately think of, Jonathan, is shortly after I'd walked away from that sales job in Toronto. And that job was killing me. I mean, you know, I was the poster child for success. I had everything that I'd been told to go get. I had my university degree. I was married. I had a couple kids, a house, and one of the highest paying selling jobs in Canada, you know, I had sales jobs in Canada. But it was totally miserable and ruining my health, abusing alcohol. I mean, I just not happy with the work environment I was in. And when I think back about it, it was a very dehumanizing workplace in terms of the way I was treated and the other people in the workplace were treated. And so here I was down in Nova Scotia feeling so proud of myself. I'd said, screw those naysayers, and I'd come down here and I was going to start my own business. And I didn't care if everybody told me that, you know, that it was a stupid dream. The problem, you know, was with this, I had listened to something that I shouldn't have listened to. And that is I convinced myself that I had given up any hope of a career in order to make this. I made a big sacrifice in order to raise my family in this little fishing village. So I was lost for 3 years, man, because I walked around telling everybody my goal in life is to make enough money to put food on the table and feed the family. And as you can well imagine, that's exactly what I did and nothing more. It was like living paycheck to paycheck, except when you're running your own business, that's a very uncomfortable place to be, because if the next paycheck doesn't come, there's nobody that you could say, well, I worked. I still want to get my money, you know, and if, you know, if you have employees, then they're always going to get paid before you, which is something I'm sure you know about, you know, these days. So I was really, really blind to the reality at that time. Looking back, I can tell that my problem was I just bought into this myth, you know, that I could have lifestyle or a career, but not both. But I didn't see it at all at the time, man. I was just, it was like the blinders were as complete as they could possibly be. And, you know, I owe it to a great friend. You know, he's gone now. Rest in peace, Roy. But Roy was a Polish New Englander living in Minnesota at the time, much older. And he and I connected at a software conference. And he wanted me basically to start working with them in a partnership to bring their software to Canada and to invest in changing it. And because you can't take, you know, software into schools in Canada, for example, if you don't have metric lessons, you can't, you know, come in with inches and feet and stuff because we don't teach that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, Roy, I mean, I can sell, but look where I'm living, man. I can't build a national company. I'm in this little fishing village. People will think I'm sitting there in rubber boots, and I can still see him. He used to drink Tanqueray martinis, and he just leans back and he looks at me and he says, pretty close word for word, and this was the day when you wanted to pay your, you know, your American Express or your credit card bill. You actually had to mail a check in, eh? So I know it's ancient, eh? But he said, Tim, he said, I write a check to American Express every month, and it goes somewhere in North Dakota or South Dakota or some little place that I've never heard of. He says, I don't give a crap. Why do you think your customers are going to really care, you know, where your business is? And it took that sort of slap in the face to realize that self-limiting beliefs, like, because people had told me I couldn't do it, that I was really convinced that I couldn't do it. And man, Jonathan, from that day on, I just started saying to myself, well, instead of asking or telling myself, giving myself a list of reasons why I can't do this, what if I just said, well, what if I could do it? And what mm-hmm. would have to happen for me to do it? And, you know, that led to the growth of this company that at the time was supporting myself. I was working out of my basement, you know, with a homemade desk on a cement floor next to the wood furnace. I enjoyed those roots, but that grew into a company where we went national. People talk about the money. They talk about $10 million in sales, which was a significant amount of money. Now, you and I both know in business that doesn't mean I made $10 million. You know, mm-hmm. you spent a lot of money in business. But the thing I'm proudest of all that, man, is that the program we were selling was adult literacy. It was teaching adults numeracy and literacy skills that they needed in order to have a chance to get a decent job. Yeah. So they'd gotten through our school system and they just couldn't function. We helped set up 115 learning centers from coast to coast in our customer locations. And these centers had 10 to 20 computers each with adults, you know, in those kind of circumstances and at-risk youth. A lot of at-risk youth, people who are at risk of getting thrown out of school. So they said, well, you might as well go down there and try that because you're not working here type of thing. I'll never know how many lives we touched. I mean, but even one would have made it worthwhile. But it was, you know, it all happened because I just sat up and I said, damn it, you know, what an idiot. You know, like people, just because people say you can't do something. And I think really, you know, I've been on a mission ever since to if there's one thing I want to accomplish in life, you know, in terms of my having an impact on young entrepreneurs and people in general, but in particular young people, it's where my passion is these days. It's just helping them understand the power of belief. Hmm. You know, what we believe. I know people, when times are tough, it's really hard to believe it. But the reality is what we believe is the single biggest determinant of what's actually going to happen. And if we believe that we're not worth it, and we believe that, you know, that other people are out to get us and it's not our fault, or that, you know, I'm too old, too young, the wrong sex, you know, whatever. If we believe those things, that's exactly what's going to happen.
And so I have a question before I actually, my main question I'm going to ask you is, what is an actual naysayer? But before I ask that question, something that comes to mind is, and something that I don't know if we're even exploring enough into, is the tiny village that you lived in Nova Scotia. I am sure that you have learned a ton of things living in complete solidarity, where you are out in the middle of a field where there's, I'm sure, fish, and I'm at least envisioning mountains of some sorts. Am I anywhere
ocean.
Close?
No mountains, but I'm looking at, right now, all I can see is forest and trees on the ocean horizon. I mean, if I were to go across the road, I could see homes, but we are literally a village on the seacoast. And
so what are some of the things that you've learned in this, like, living in this village? Because I'm a city boy through and through. I like tall buildings. I feel comforted by being hugged by a huge 50-story plus building. What is it like, and what are the things that you've learned and applied to your business? And then we'll get on to what the naysayers actually mean.
That's a cool question, and people hardly ever ask me that, and I'm kind of glad you said it. Like, I grew up in Toronto. I was a city boy, and I don't dislike cities, but here's the thing that I think I found. First of all, I'm one of these people that really needs a connection with nature, and so when I'm trying to de-stress, like, you know, even just looking out the window, like where I'm sitting right now, if I looked away from you and just looked outside, but for years, you know, I've done this. I've get up in the morning, for example, and I'll walk my dog on the beach before anybody much is up. Some people in the city, you'll meditate and stuff like that. That's kind of my form of meditation. I would just go down there. The mind would be blank. The ocean breeze is coming in. You're walking with your dog. If you run into anybody, it's just somebody you know who has a, you know, a dog. The odd tourist in July and August. But, you know, you're just able to, I don't know, decompress. And yet when you come back, Jonathan, I sit down and all of a sudden I've solved three problems that I didn't even know I was thinking about. So that's the first thing. For me anyway, nature is nurtures my soul. The other thing is that, you know, in the city, I had a really terrible time once I hit it, you know, successfully, you know, in business. I got caught up in all the trappings. I got caught up in wearing the fancy clothes and going to the expensive restaurants and time out, you know, entertaining with my friend was going out to a really fancy restaurant. I got down here, and it's nothing against the restaurants around here, although they certainly don't compare with what you have in the city. But when we were growing up, that's not what we did. We had three or four couples that were really good friends, and if it was a Friday night, we're over at somebody's house or the other. And we're making food. Their local dish down here is called rapu or rapi pie. It's a chicken and potato dip. But, you know, you make whatever you want. Seafood chowder was another really common one. Everybody would just bring something and throw it in a pot. And, you'd throw some music on and you'd shoot the breeze. And, you know, crazily enough, the women will all gather in the kitchen. The men will all gather in the living room. And we just sort of chat. And the other thing that I think that really stands out, in the city, the people I was associating with were all folks that were caught up in the same rat race I was in. So if they asked me how's work or how's business, I tended to give them pretty long answers and detailed answers. And they understood my business, so we'd go back and forth. Down here, my best friend of 30 some odd years, he builds houses. He's a construction guy. He's brilliant. He can make anything in the world. The other day, I'm out for dinner with him, and I say, well, what are you working on now? He says, oh, I'm making an excavator. And he means it from scratch. Like, who does that? But but the thing is, when Kevin would say to me, how's business? He cared more. That question meant more to him than anybody in the city when they were asking me. He really wanted to know, but he just wanted a one-word answer. It's good. It's great. It's bad. Oh, well, that sucks. Okay, now let's talk about, you know, hunting or fishing or, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever's going on, you know. And, you know, and so for me, I emphasize this to so many people. I mean, you all choose the environment you're comfortable in, and you're hugged by those buildings and you love it, and that's absolutely fabulous. You'd feel likely very out of your element working here. For me, it provided this environment where I could find the balance that I wasn't able to get in the city. I could never turn off in the city. And out here, I just have found it so much easier to, you know, to turn that switch off and to allow myself to rest and to not take stuff so seriously, because there's nobody really to complain to. They don't really care. Like they'll be sorry that you're upset, but they're not going to get into the details of it.
Yeah.
And you're probably making three times what they're making anyway. So like, there's not going to be a lot of sympathy.
Right. Very true. But the conversations are real and raw and genuine, which is, which is a huge takeaway.
And you go shopping, man, like you will see people that, you know, every single place you go into.
That's awesome.
When you're driving down the road, you know, you wave at people. You know, you see somebody coming, you put your hand up and, you know, and you recognize the vehicle from 500 yards away or something like that. I mean, I don't know. It's just for us, for, you know, for me, I know it's extended my life. And it's not a place I ever really, I love to travel, but it's not a place I would ever want to, you know, leave permanently.
That's awesome. The, screw the naysayers. You said in the bio where a lot of people have laughed at you starting an educational, the community that you're building. Have the naysayers, spoke to you about the community that you're building? Have they?
The new effort? Yeah. Yes. And here's the interesting part. Those naysayers are scattered all over the world, and many of them are highly successful, you know, business coaches, among other things. Here's what was going on, man. Like, I was getting ready to retire, Jonathan, I think I've told you, but I was like, you know, I turned 60 and I think, yeah, maybe it's time. You know, I being an individual one-on-one business coach was just, it got after 12 years. I mean, which is what I did after I sold off the IP and the software company. I'm sort of ready for something different. But I started to get really upset at what I have observed and continue to observe in terms of the way we're preparing young people for the workplace, for the transition from school to the workplace, and for the kinds of opportunities that are out there, which are enormous. But, you know, we've got these kids coming through a compliance-based education system where they're told to sit down, shut up, behave, memorize facts, and wait for instructions. So when they get out of school, whatever level of education that is, and honestly, it doesn't make much difference for a lot of these people. The piece of paper from college is not what it used to be. But when they get out of school, if the job they're looking for isn't there, they sit back and they, you know, well, what am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. And they end up settling for, you know, a job they dislike or at a turnstile of temporary jobs and everything else. So, and that's self-belief. And it's about thinking like an entrepreneur. So I got on in my mind that I want to work with people in their, you know, Gen Z in particular, and millennials that are still interested, but a lot of them seems to have been disengaging. So, I mean, I can't help that. I mean, so I went out and I talked to all sorts of business coaches around the world to get their ideas, because they were building communities and stuff like that. All of them, I won't name names, but all of them, man, said, you're crazy. You can't make any money with 22-year-olds or people that are still in university. You have to wait till they're 30 to 45 years of age, where they've had enough pain and suffering in their life and they're miserable enough and they've managed to put some money aside. Then you can make big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying, well, I don't want to do that. First of all, there's a lot of people already doing that. There's no shortage of business coaches out there if you're, you know, in that category. And it's not that I couldn't talk to them and help them, but it's just not the need I saw is at a much, you know, much not younger level. And people just kept telling me it'll never happen. You're wasting your time. You're wasting your money. And the thing with me, Jonathan, is that once I figured that lesson out that we talked about at the beginning, the more people that tell me that, the more determined I get to say, well, I don't.